begin here in the bottom of Samach Damad Amad Bet. Last night, Amar Rav Sheshet Mishum, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Kol Ani Liftor Et Kol Am Kulo Min Adin, I could get everybody off the hook for all their Averot. Yom Shecharab Beit HaMikdash Ved Achshav, from the time of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash until now, Shenemar, Hachin Shimina Zot Aniya V'Shikoret V'Lo Miyayin. Here you have a Pasuk in Yishayahu, which draws a parallel between Shikoret with someone who is drunk, and Aniya, which is the poverty, impoverishment, the difficulty. So from the time the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, the fact that the Jews are in Galut and they're in a difficult situation, they have the same din as a Shikor. And just like a Shikor is not held accountable for their actions, so too, Bnei Yisrael should not be held accountable for their actions. Meitave, is that really true? Shikor, mekcho mekach. Umemkoro memkar, avara veira sheish bamita memitimoto, malkut malkimoto. A shikur has a din, a full-fledged din, like a person who is of sound mind, of sound judgment, and therefore if they engage in commerce, their sales and their purchases are considered to be in place or take effect. If they violate any sin and they are deserving of a death penalty, if they're deserving of corporal punishment, they receive it. Klalo shel davar, here's the general principle, arihu kipikeach l'kol divarav. He's considered to be like a normal person. Ella, shpatur min atfilah. The only exemption that he has is that he can't daven. Because there he needs to stand before the melech, and that he doesn't have the capability of doing. Ma yechol mini liftor. So then, what's that statement that was made by Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria that I could exempt? It's this, the kamar nami midin tfilah. Nobody will be held accountable for their tfilah. Am Rabbi Chanina, lo shnai lo shlo igia lishtichruto shalot. That depends how far he is drunk. There are different stages of being drunk. There's a point at which even the individual would be exempt or freed of all obligations because they aren't functioning in anymore. So if he reaches that type of drunkenness, then he's inebriated to the point where he's not functioning, doesn't understand what's happening at all, then of course, ein mekcho mekach, ein memkaro memkar. So it really depends on the level of inebriation as to what type of dispensation you get as far as your actions are concerned. At the level, it seems to be that the Pasuk is drawing the parallel of Aniya and Shikoret. The Gemara seems to assume that that's not a drunkenness where the person has lost all sensibilities and doesn't have any cognitive ability, but rather they do, it's just they're not appropriately suited to stand before Hashem, but otherwise everything they do is considered to be like a normal person. Alright, next Gemara is Amar Rabbi Chanina. Kolamepik magain bishad gaba sogrim vichotmim tzarot beado. So these are two memorot we're going to see in a second. Rashi has one way of interpreting it, and then we'll go back and see that the Rabbeinu Chananel has another way of learning this Gemara entirely, and it makes a difference. And then Afkomino at the Gemara asks in the end. First, we'll go with Rashi's interpretation, which is Amar Rabbi Chanina kolamepik magain. Anybody who passes by, magain, being the bracha of magain Avraham, so whoever passes by does not daven shmoneh esrei, bishat gava, the time that they are haughty, shat gava is at the time that they are inebriated, then sogrim v'chotmim tzarot be'ado, they will close up and seal tzarot be'ado in the positive sense. He will not be punished for such a decision, that is the proper decision here. Proper decision is to skip Shmoneh Esrei when you're in that state of inebriation. Shneamar. So how do we know this? It says, Ga'ava afikei maginim sagur chutam tzar. So Ga'ava is the pride. Afikei maginim are the scales. Sagur chutam tzar. They are tightly packed on the back of the animal. So they're tightly packed there, these scales, but they are the pride of this individual. How do you know that this lashon of afik means to pass by or to overlook? Achai bagdu, my brethren acted deceitfully, kimo nachal, like a river, like a brook, afike nichalim, like those courses of the water, yaavoru, they will pass by. So you see that the word afik is used in the context of passing by, overlooking, not paying attention to, so to over here, when he says, kolam epik magain, whoever skips magain, that is a good thing when one is inebriated. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, kosh eno mapik itmar, that the right way to say it is that whoever doesn't mapik, but Rabbi Yochanan is going to have a different interpretation of the word mapik, he's going to say it does not mean to pass by, but rather means not to utter, not to speak. So kosh eno mapik magain, whoever does not utter magain Avraham, does not say that Shmoneh Esrei, that also is a positive thing. My mashmadai mepik lashon diglu yehu. According to Rabbi Yochanan, then the meaning of the word mepik here is not to pass by or to overlook, but rather to speak or to expose. Dichtiv. Vayera'u afike mayim. They saw or they seen channels of water. Vayigualu mosdot tevel. And they exposed the foundations of the world. So here, afike means channels or to flow. So that's an exposure or to say. So they're both saying the same thing. One's formulated in the positive, which is, Rabbi Hanina says, kol ha-mipik, whoever does skip Magen Abraham, that is a positive thing. Then Rabbi Yochanan formulates it in the negative, which is called eno mipik, but a peak, according to him, means to speak or to utter. So whoever doesn't utter Shemoneh Esrei, again, this is a positive thing. Now Gemara wants to understand, michdei, cry, mashma ben lamar, ben lamar. In terms of support from the psukim, they both have good support in the psukim for their position as to what the interpretation of the word mepik is. So my ben ayu, what's the nafkamina between them? Ika ben ayu, the Rav Sheshet. The difference between them is this story about, or this practice of Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet masar shintei lishamek. Rav Sheshet used to give over his sleep to his servant, to his helper. Mar, it lay the Rav Sheshet. Mar, late lay the Rav Sheshet. One of them has Rav Sheshet, or subscribes to that position of Rav Sheshet. One of them does not subscribe to the position of Rav Sheshet. According to Rashi, that is Rabbi Hanina, who says that you are avure. So then, lately, the Rav Sheshet, he does not subscribe to Rav Sheshet, but surely me'elav. That's pass by. Pass by means that you have to shake off the inebriation yourself. You can't have someone else intervene to shake it off. Therefore, if you fell asleep, you have to wait till you arise or arouse from that sleep on your own, of your own volition, and then you're permitted to daven. If you have someone else wake you up from that sleep, in order to daven, that is not considered to be appropriate according to Rabbi Hanina. Whereas according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's if you're not uttering. But if you have someone else who wakes you up and allows you to do it now, then that's fine. So the concept being, or the idea being, according to Rashi, Tosafo points out, maybe these are on the nights of the summer nights like we're in now, where the nights are much shorter. And he became inebriated and he's falling asleep. He wants to get up in the morning to daven. So he has his servant, he has someone wake him up. He wouldn't have woken up naturally, but he has this individual intercede and wake him up. Is that enough to shake off that which you had in your body, the inebriation that you had felt, and to daven? So according to Rabbi Hanina, it says, kol mepik. Anybody who passes by, now he's using the passes by in different terms here, passing by also to mean that he doesn't say Magen Avraham, but also passes means that the alcohol, the effects of the alcohol have passed, and then you can daven. But if someone else causes the effects of the alcohol to pass, then that doesn't work, as opposed to Rabbi Yochanan. That's the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Tosafot quotes Rashi's interpretation, says it's difficult, and he says that it seems to make more sense like the Rabbeinu Chananel. And according to Rabbeinu Chananel, this is the interpretation. Let us show Noah. Am Rav Chanina, kol mepik magain b'shat gava. Perish, kol amavir magain, umechase yitzro b'shat gava. Anybody who passes by magain and covers up his yitzer b'shat gava, klomar, eich yitgaber alav, tomein otol shal yitgaber. When the Yetzer Hara gets the better of him, he buries it, so it won't get the better of him. Then, so gim b'chodmim tzarot be'ado. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan amar, she'enu me'pik itmar, klomar, mikol she'enu mi'chaseh. Whoever doesn't cover it up, umavir elo migaleu, he reveals it. Umepik ma'gein v'yotzei lehilachem k'negdo l'kovsho. Goes to fight against it and to capture it. V'zu ha'gava hi, she'et shikvato shel adam. Again, he explains gava is the same as Rashi's shikuto. Question is, how do you deal with the drunkenness or the inebriation? Do you attack it head on, or do you submit to it? So Rabbi Hanina says you should submit to it and go to sleep. And that's how you wear off the effects of the alcohol, is to go to sleep. And that's the proper way to deal with it. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the better way to deal with it is to take it face on. We saw in yesterday's daf the ability to shake off the alcohol. You walk. You do other things that will cause the inebriation to leave you. So that is Rabbi Yochanan's approach. So then they bring Rav Sheshet as the nafkamina between them. Can someone else wake you up in between? If the other person wakes you up, does that work? Do we say that you have to let yourself fall into a sleep, into a deep slumber, Rabbi Hanina, and then that'll wear off the alcohol, not have someone else interrupt it? You have to get rid of it by sleeping through, and that's fine. Or Do we say that you actively have to engage and try to get rid of the inebriation, and therefore someone woke you up, it'd be fine as well, because we want it just to wear off. We don't mind how you do it or how you go about doing that, and preferably in an active manner. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Chiya bar Ashi Amarav. Ko she'ein da'atom yushevet alav al yitpa'elel. Any person who is not at ease should not daven. Mishum she'ne'amar, because it says, bitzar al yoreh. When one is in difficulty and pain, al yoreh, he should not give hora'ah, he should not give instruction, he should not give psak halacha. Okay, you can see the problem already. There is no Torah or on this, and that's because the pasuk doesn't exist. The Gemara is quoting a pasuk that has no reference in Tanakh. Rashi suggests over here, Badakti achara mikra, ze ve'enu b'chol ha'ktuvim. I cannot find it anywhere in Tanakh. B'shema b'sefer ben sirahu. Maybe it's found in Sefer ben Sirah, which the Gemara does do in other places, as Tosafot points out. The Gemara in other places quotes Sefer ben Sirah as if it's a pasuk. They'll say Shenemar, and then they'll quote a line for a Sefer ben Sirah, which is interesting in and of itself, because it's not, I quote, a book of the canon. Nevertheless, they'll still quote it Shenemar, and it means that the Amoraim were very familiar with the Sefer ben Sirah, which is written during the time of Bayit Shini, or the time of probably the early Tanaim and the time of Bayit Shini. It's written, and they have a lot of familiarity with it. We did not have Sefer ben Sirah, or a lot of Sefer ben Sirah. It was finally put together, and that's one of the biggest finds in the Cairo Geniza. That's actually what Solomon Schechter was after. When he went to the Cairo Geniza, he thought he found pieces from the Sefer ben Sirah, and that was what ended up happening. When they put together pieces from the Cairo Geniza, they were actually able to put together the Sefer ben Sirah, which has a lot in it. It's a large book, but a book that has more than simply halachic information like we have in the Gemara, but also has hashkafic views of the Chachamim, as well as songs, poetry. It has a much broader text than what we would find in a pure halachic book. And that's the Sefer ben Sirah here that's quoted, or possibly being quoted by the Gemara. Tosafot, on the other hand, brings two other possibilities as to what the interpretation is. He brings from the Rabbeinu Shmuel, Perish, which is the Rashbam, Sheshiv Rabbeinu Kolonimus, Shekein Doresh B'Yushalmi. Yushalmi says this, Kol Meitzar Al Yoreh. It's not that that's the proof text, but rather that is the statement. Shkola Meitzar, anybody who is in difficulty, pain, uncomfortable, and not at ease, Al Yoreh, should not give Psak Halacha, Dichtiv, Shimi Nazot Aniyah V'Shikoret V'lo Miyayin. And the proof text they quote is the Pasuk we quoted above from Yishayahu, which would make a lot of sense that this Gemara is being brought here in that context. They quote that as the proof text. That's the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi also has, in Perkei Neumdim, Abad Min HaDerech Asur Litpalel Mizeatam. And it brings the same Pasuk as the proof text. So therefore, that's one possibility is what happened here. The proof text got mixed up with the actual statement. So if they're bringing the statement, which is what the Yerushalmi makes as a statement, proved from the Pasuk in Yishael, they bring that as the proof text instead. That's one possibility. The other possibility is the Rabbeinu Tam Efresh, Temhai Krakadorish. They bring it from the Pasuk in Iyov, which is, Ayaroch Shuacha Lo Bitzar. Klomar, Bishat Zara Al Taroch. The time that you're in pain, do not spread your table. Don't lay out your tefillah before Hashem. And the Tosafot mentions it in other places as well, that sometimes the Gemara doesn't quote the whole Pasuk. They quote just a section of a Pasuk, or even made up piece, the interpretation of the Pasuk, not the Pasuk itself, even though they're quoting a Pasuk. He says that it's a little difficult because then why is the Gemara saying, Al Yoreh, Tavale the Meimar, Al Yitzpalel? Interpretation is Al Yitzpalel, according to Rabbeinu Tam, not Al Yoreh. So it's a difficult quotation of the Pasuk. The way that they quoted from the Yerushalmi might make the most sense because there, they're comparing in the Yerushalmi, Aniyah to Shikoret. And we know that someone who's drunk may not daven. So too, Aniyah, someone who's bitzar, not at ease, may not daven. And if therefore quoting that Pasuk in Yishayahu might be the best proof text to what we're trying to accomplish over here. Rabbi Chanina, V'yom adaratach lo matzli. On a day of anger, did not daven. Day when things were not settled. So lo matzli. Amar b'tzayar al yoreh tiv. It quotes the same pasuk, quote unquote, that we just had before. Marokva b'yom adashuta. On the day of the shuta, which Rashi interprets, ruach dromit min hashevet bo v'chazaka. So the southerly wind is blowing, a strong wind. A wind that usually brings with it difficult stormy weather. Lo v'nafik l'beidina. He didn't go out to the courts on that day because he says it's not going to be at ease. Things aren't at ease, and he can't give a proper psak halacha. Amar Rav Nachum Bayitzak, Hilchot Baya Tziluta ki yom diistano. When a person gives psak halacha, he needs clarity. He needs the visibility that is associated with v'yoma d'astana. Yom d'astana, as Rashi says, is v'yom shem neshevet bo ruach tzfonit. On the day that the northerly wind blows, which is a clear and pleasant day. They associated the weather, whether they literally meant the weather, was unsettling, and therefore they didn't want to give psak halacha. Only when the weather was good they wanted to give it. Or they're using that as a mashal, to say that only when a person is settled should they give psak halacha, but if a person is not at ease or things are stormy, quote unquote, they shouldn't be giving psak halacha. Amar Abaye, Ye amar li aim, karev kutcha, lo tanae. Abaye said, had my mother asked from me, karev kutcha, bring the dip, the Babylonian dip, lo tanae, I wouldn't have been able to learn. Abaye's mother passed away when he was very young. We have always pointed out as amar li aim is his stepmother or maidservant that brought him up. The other thing is, whether he made this as a statement, when my mother did ask me to bring the dip, that caused me to lose track and I wasn't able to focus the rest of the day in learning. Or whether he said, had she asked me for that, I wouldn't have been able to put together my learning, my Torah Shebaal Peh. I needed a clear head, I needed to have clarity on the days that I learned and had my Torah Shebaal Peh. And therefore, she did not ask me for these things, and that's how I was able to learn, because she didn't engage me. Even though it's a small thing, and it's a nothing item, it would have set me off, or it would have caused me to be not at ease, and I wouldn't have learned as well. Amar Rava, or the other Gersa says, Amar Ravina, Ikartza Tankino. If I got bitten by a louse, Lotanei, I wouldn't have been able to learn, or again, wouldn't have been able to learn, or if it happened on that day, I was not able to learn, either possibility. But what they're saying is, even small distractions, you need to be completely immersed in the Talmud and the learning and the Torah Shebaal Peh in order to have clarity and to understand and to remember it, and any little distraction would throw you off. They had a need for absolute concentration. Mar Brei de Ravina, Avdalei Ime, Zayin Mani Lezayin Yome. Son of Ravina, his mother made for him 7 pairs of clothing for the 7 days. In the context of which this is said, it sounds like she made it easy for him, that he didn't have to wash his clothing, he didn't have to do anything. He had 7 pairs of clothing, so he had a pair of clothing for each day. And he didn't have to focus on what he wore or what he was going to have for that day, because he had what was there, and that allowed him to learn. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. Lo ivre lelia el leshinta. It says, night was created in order to sleep. Tosafot points out, maybe these are on the nights of the summer nights like we're in now, where the nights are much shorter. I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Lo ivre siara el legirsa. The moon was only created in order to be able to learn by the moon. They didn't really have lighting at night. They didn't have the way that we have electric lights to light up, and therefore the moon made a big difference at night. If you ever walk, there are still places that you can go where there is no illumination. And if you walk in those places in a night when the moon is full versus a night when the moon is not full, you can see how much the moon contributes to your ability to see. The moon was a light for them. And so he says that the moon was created in order to be able to learn, because there was light then. And it meant that at night, you could still be up and learning at night. Amalei Rabbi Zeira Mechadad en Shmateich. You were very sharp. You know your stuff well. Because I learned during the day. These were daytime memorot. These were things I did at day. I did it when I was fully awake and fully engaged. And that's why I remember it so well. And that's why I know my Torah so well. This is one of my favorite lines in Shas. Amrle brate de Rav Chista. The daughter of Rav Chista says to Rav Chista, lo bei mar minam purta. Don't you need to sleep a little bit? You're learning so much. You're doing so much. You never sleep. Don't you need to sleep? And Amrle, he responds to her, Hashta ato yomi darike vikatini vininim tuva. Don't worry. The long days and the short days are coming up, and we'll sleep really well. So as Rashi explains, yomi darike means we're going to be in the grave, and there's going to be lots of time to sleep in the grave. And katine, a time when you have no chance to learn and to do mitzvot. That's all given up. So those days are shortly coming, or coming soon. Now make up for all the sleep I didn't sleep now. We'll have years to make up for that in the grave. So he says, no reason to sleep now. We can sleep later. I'm Rav Nachman Ben Yitzchak. Anan pole de yamamei ninu. We are day laborers. Meaning in this context, learning Torah is a daytime activity. That we are day workers, that you have to engage in it when your mind is clear and when you can concentrate. Not when you're tired and falling asleep. That's not the proper time to do it. You have to do it at a time when you can remember and be engaged in what you are learning. The Gemara here is really talking to the tension between utilizing night time for learning of Torah, and we have many positive statements in the Gemara with regards to learning Torah at night, including in the Gemara and Tamid on Daf Lamed Bet Amud Bet. There the Gemara says that anybody who learns Torah at night, it's the Ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Omeid Genegdo. It's as if he's sitting literally opposite him, because it says, Kumi roni balayla shifchi kamayim libech nochach p'nei Hashem. We also have the Gemara in Chagiga on Daf Yud Bet that says, anybody learns Torah at night, chutcho chesed mashuch alav in the yom. So we have plenty of positive statements about limud Torah at night, as well as the fact that if a person uses the night for limud Torah, he has more time. He should be engrossed in Torah and not sleeping. On the balance, on the opposite side, we have the effect of not sleeping is that a person then will be tired during the day, want to sleep during the day to make up for the sleep they didn't make at night. Anyone who has teenagers will know this experience of staying up at night and sleeping during the day. And that is, if one properly sleeps at night, then they will have the energy and the awareness to learn properly during the day. So learning at night can't come at expense of the learning during the day, because then you haven't gained anything. And that's the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. Nights were made for sleeping, because if you sleep at night, then you'll be functional and you'll be able to give your best during the day. So here the Gemara, not necessarily arguing over here, but trying to find a balance between sleeping at night so you have the proper energy and awareness to learn during the day, but also being sure that you don't oversleep or sleep too much. You have to give up something. You have to sacrifice some of your sleep for a limud Torah, because all that sleep may not be necessary. Ravacha bar Yaakov, Yosef Upora. This is an important line for those that learned Daf Yomi. He says he used to, Yazif used to borrow and para, pay back. And that is that if he had a daily amount of learning that he would do, if he became engaged during the day in other activities and therefore couldn't learn, Yazif, he borrowed the time, upara, and he paid it back that night. And it's brought down, you can see here, it's brought down the halacha, that if a person has a fixed amount that they learn each day, they should not allow that day to pass without accomplishing that fixed amount of learning, and that they should stay up at night. If they're unable to accomplish it during the day, they should stay up at night in order to make up for it, to accomplish that which they set out to accomplish. Of course, that has applicability for those learning the Daf HaYomi. Amar Rav Elazar, Abba min HaDerech, Al Yitpalel Shlosha Yamim. Well, as it says, someone who came from traveling should not daven for 3 days. Shenemar, Vek B'tzeim El Nar Haba, El Ahava, it's spelled with a hey in Sefer Ezra, Vanachanesh sham yamim shlosha vaveina ba'am. So I gathered all the people together. This is Ezra when he's gathering the people to take them up to Eretz Yisrael. And I brought them. We were by the river of Ahava. Vanachanesh sham yamim shlosha. Then we were camped there for 3 days. Then vaveina ba'am. Now here, the term avina ba'am means I tried to understand. I was getting clarity with the am. The Gemara is saying literally avina. To gain understanding, you need 3 days. Your mind isn't settled. To have Havana, to have Bina, until 3 days have passed. Same thing with davening. A person's mind is not at ease in order to be able to daven until 3 days have passed and after they've traveled, until they've settled down. Avu Ad Shmuel, Ki Ata Baruch Olomatzli Tlata Yome. His father of Shmuel, if he came on a trip, he would not daven for 3 days. Shmuel Olomatzli Bebeita Did Be Shichra. Shmuel would not daven in a house which had Sheikhar, which had beer in it. Rashi says the fumes for him bothered him or made him uncomfortable, and therefore he didn't daven. But Papa Lomatzin Beit Itbe Harsana. Papa did not daven in a house that had harsana, which is the fish hash in it. Also must have had a smell, something that made him uncomfortable and not at ease, and therefore he did not daven. Now, as far as the halacha is concerned, technically, this is halachically appropriate, that the person who's not settled, not at ease, should not daven, because they won't be able to concentrate properly in davening. The problem that we have today, it's the same issue that's brought up in the Gemara in Brachot, is that the assumption is, if you don't daven for the 3 days, the implications are that you're able to concentrate, and you daven with full kavanah at every other time. So, if you daven all the time with kavanah, then you could say, for those 3 days, I can't daven. When we have the general halakha approach today is that we're unable to bring ourselves to that full concentration at any time, and therefore to not daven when you're in this position would be yuhara. That would be considered to be some sort of haughtiness to assume that you really had kavanah at other times. It's the same thing we have by chatan, belayla rishon, that the chatan on the first night is not supposed to say shema. So there, the Gemara also says that you're not allowed to do it because of a lack of kavanah or concentration. Yet, we don't pasuk in that way because, again, the implications are that if you don't say it that night, that means every other night you have full kavanah, which we don't assume is true today. We have it in regards to this. We also have it with regards to the fact that in the first 3 brachot of Shmoneh Esrei, if a person isn't focused, does not totally engrossed in those 3 brachot, then he has to go back and daven again. We bring down, again, the Ramah brings the halacha that maybe it's just not worth going back and davening again because the same thing will happen that happened the first time around. All of these assume a certain amount of concentration and focus that we don't necessarily have. This is being said not by lay people, this is being said by the greats, of halacha, and therefore, so a lot of these halachot, even though technically they apply, they may not apply because we're just not able to concentrate as well as we should be. Alright, anybody who is seduced while he is intoxicated, yeshvo midat kono, he's similar to his creator. Over here, as Rashi explains, this being seduced is people were trying to get you to agree to something, trying to appease you, and so they ply you with a little alcohol, and you become a little easier going, more willing to acquiesce to their request, and you do. And then afterwards you regret it, feel bad, oh my gosh, a drunk and I acquiesced in that state. But here the Gemara says that's similar to the Creator, Shnemar. Vayarach Hashem et Reach HaNichoach. This is by Noach when he brings the karbanot after he exits the Teva. Over there it says that Hashem smells the smell of the karbanot, and then he goes ahead and he's appeased and makes the promise that he will not. So he makes a brit, the brit Keshet, promises that he will not destroy man again because of the karbanot of Noach. So Hashem was captured by that reyach, and we see, Rashi says, that there's evidence of the fact beforehand that smelling is similar to drinking. We don't have any statement like that. The Bach says he thinks that's what Shmuel's din was. Shmuel said before that when he smelled the beer, he was unable to concentrate and he didn't daven. So we see there that smell has the same impact as intoxication. Just like you don't daven when you're intoxicated, so too you don't daven when you smell something that sets you off, makes you not at ease. So from that parallel, they're saying over here too, that the Reach Nichoach of Hashem, that Hashem was appeased by the Reach Nichoach, you shouldn't feel bad if you're appeased by having the alcohol. Anybody who can handle their alcohol, can keep themselves together after they drink, has the dat, the understanding, the wisdom of the 70 zakenim. Yayin nitan ba'ayin otiot. Yayin was given with 70 letters. It's not literally 70 letters, but the gematria of yayin is 70. Yud is 10, 10, plus nun is 50, that's 70. Besod nitan ba'ayin otiot. And the word sod is also 70 bigematria. That is samach is 60, 6 for the vav, 4 for the dalet, that adds up to 70. Nichnas yayin, yotza sod, one of the most famous lines in the Gemara with regards to yayin. The wine goes in, and yotza sod, out comes out the sod. Sod here can be interpreted in two ways. Sod means all the secrets. The person spills out everything that they have. That's a person who is not midyashiv b'yeno, can't handle his alcohol, and therefore everything comes flying out. On the other hand, kol midyashiv b'yeno, if he's able to hold it in and keep his yayin together, then he's granted that clarity and that sod of the ayin zekenim. So that is what's being described here. The parallel between yayin and sod, nichnas yayin. Yatsa sod is the ability to control. Not everything was spilled, therefore he has the sod, he has the capabilities of the ayin zekenim. Because instead of it going out, he's held it together. By holding it together, he's granted that. Easy way to remember this, by the way, is that the Gemara about Yayin in Eruvin is found on Samach Dalet Samen Hey, is Sod Hashem. Samach Dalet Samen Hey, Sod Hashem, can remind me, Nichlas Yayin, Yatsa Sod. We saw that earlier in the Gemara that in order to remember Torah Shebaal Peh, you need mnemonics, you need to have simanim. So there's a siman to remember where it's found in Eruvin, Sod Hashem. Amar Rechanin, Lo Nivra Yayin, Ele Denachem Avelim, Ul Shalem Schar LeRishayim. Wine was only created in order to comfort the mourners and to pay rewards to the Rishayim, to those that are evil. Shenemar, because it says the Pasuk in Mishlei, Tnu Shechar LeOved, V'Yayin LeMarei Nefesh, that you should give intoxicating beverages LeOved. Oved means either the one who is lost or the one who has lost, someone who is in a difficult situation, but yayin and wine to the marei nefesh, those that are bitter. Pasuk tells you that wine or intoxicating beverages are a way to take away the sorrows and the difficulties. That is good for nichum avelim, and it's also good for the rishayim, because then they don't experience the bad and the sorrow, and that gives them their reward in this world instead of the world to come. Now as far as nichum avelim, it was the practice. In the time of the Gemara talks about this in the Gemara in Brachot, the practice was that people be'avelut used to drink wine in order to take away the sorrow or the depth of the pain. Problem was that they were drinking so much, becoming intoxicated, inebriated, to the point where they weren't functioning anymore, they weren't be'avelut anymore, and therefore the Gemara put into practice what we have today, which is that they don't drink, that the avelim don't drink in order to prevent that problem from happening. So it's not that Ikar Din and Avel may not drink. And Avel doesn't drink because of the problem that they could drown their sorrows, literally, and they wouldn't be bavilut anymore. The idea would be drink some wine and to take down the edge and the pain, that was permitted. But to drown one's sorrows to the point where you no longer avel, that was not permitted. And to prevent that problem, they stopped the avilim from drinking at all. Amar Rabbi Yochanan bar Papa, Koshein yayin nishpach betoch beito kamayim. Anybody who doesn't have in his house wine that spills like water, inu b'klal bracha. You want to know that you're rich? That's when in that house they spill wine, they use wine like water. Shneamar, because the pasuk says, "Uveirach lachmecha ve'et meimecha," that Hashem will bless your lechem, your bread, and your water. There in the psukim, it's towards the end of Parshat Mishpatim. For Perek Avdala deals with Mamad Har Sinai or post Mamad Har Sinai. Towards the end of Perek Chav Gimel and Mishpatim, which talks about the malach that's going to be sent in front of Bnei Israel, that if you follow the ways of Hashem and you do what's right, Hashem will take care of you. Uberach edach mecha, He will bless your food, et meimecha, and your drinks. Malachem shenikach bekesev maser, avmaim shenikach bekesev maser. The Gemara here draws a parallel in the juxtaposition of lechem to mayim, that it's not literally lechem and mayim, but rather lechem means food, and mayim means drink. And just like lechem here can be acquired with monies of Maaser Sheni, so too the water, or the drink that we're speaking about here, is something that can be acquired with Maaser Sheni money. That we already saw back in the second parak, the beginning of the second parak, B'chol Ma'arvin, that you're not allowed to buy water with kesef, Maaser Sheni. It can't be speaking about mayim over here. And therefore, ma lechem shenikach b'kesef maaser, af mayim shenikach b'kesef maaser, my niu, what is that? Yayin. The karakari lay mayim. And even though it's speaking about wine, it terms it in the pasuk as mayim. So that's the sense of the gift from Hashem, the plentiful that He's going to give you, is that when you have your wine, is like water to you, then that is the bracha of Hashem. That's when you're really rich. Inishpach bebeito kamayim, ika bracha. If it spills in his house like water, then there's bracha, v'ilo, lo. Then it's not that way. That's considered to be the real bracha. That means that Hashem has really blessed you. Right. So that's the idea of overflowing the cup, cornucopia, the idea of overflowing in excess. So too, the wine that flows over is a sign of siman bracha. It's also, in a symbolic sense, the idea of having Shabbat flow over into the week, this idea of the overflowing wine. All right, Amar Bilai, b'shlosha dvarim adam nikar, another very famous line of the Gemara. There are three things by which a person is identified, his character can be tested. Bikoso, bikiso, ubikaso. With koso, his cup, his drinking, how he holds his alcohol, how he deals with alcohol. Bikiso, kiso is his wallet, that when he deals with other people, nose v'notein be'emunah, that a person who engages in business with other people engages honestly and straightforwardly with them, that is how he's identified, bikiso, with his wallet, ubika'aso, and by his anger, how he deals with his anger. Does he get angry very easily? And even when he's angry, how does he act in that anger? Is he in a controlled state of his anger? Some people say even with his chok, with his laughter, at what he laughs. And again, when he's in a state of laughter, how he acts when he is in that quote-unquote frivolous state. All of these are the tests of the individual because they bring a person to the limits. I think in many senses, these are all items that, because so, when a person drinks the alcohol, it takes away all the inhibitions. When you drop all the inhibitions, and now a person's let open and put open before them, what do you have left behind? And that's the question of the true character of the individual. Kaso by anger is also another place where you see how a person's able to deal with adversity, how angry they get, whether they get angry, and when they're angry, what comes out? Because again, that's a lack of inhibition. Kas, the anger takes down the inhibition, a person just lets go. Again, what happens in that state? Kiso, anything to do with money, that's an area where people also lose their control, lose their mind. Even though in other areas they might be totally fine, when it comes to monetary matters, nothing matters, including halacha, including being honest, and therefore people are tested by kiso, and the same thing with sachako, the laughter of frivolity. When a person lets down their guard, what comes out and what happens in those situations? I think these are all types of situations which takes the inhibitions or takes the limits away on the individual, and you see what's left afterwards. So there you see the true character of the individual. I'm Rav Yehuda Amrav. Yisrael v'nachri b'pnimit v'Yisrael b'chitzona. After this short break of Agadita, we're back to Eruvin stuff and back to the story about Jews and non-Jews living together. What's the status of the Eruv? So here you have a case where you have a Jew and a non-Jew living in the inner Chatzer v'Yisrael b'chitzona, and then you have a Jew living in the outer area. Ba'maseh lifnei Rabbi v'asar. situation came before Rabbi and he said it's asur. It came before Rabbi Chiya and he was osir. Question here is, what's the status of these individuals? We said before, if you're one-on-one with the Nachri, it's not a problem in terms of making an Eruv, because that's lo shchiach. Since it's lo shchiach, there's no Eruv issue. And Nachri with two Jews, then you have a problem. So the question here is, what is this situation? You have one Jew and one Nachri in the inner area, so they're one-on-one. Therefore, it should be fine. Or, do we say that there's a Yisrael in the outer Chatzer, and now it really becomes two-on-one, and because of that, there's a problem with the Nachri. Yotuv Rab of Rav Yosef Shilei Pirkei de Rav Sheshet. Rab and Rav Yosef were sitting at the tail end of the drasha of Rav Sheshet. Yotuv Rav Sheshet v'kamar, keman amra Rav l'shmatei. Who did Rav say this over, like, that when Rav said this halacha in the name of, whether it's Rabbi or the name of Rabbi Chiya, that he said that the din or the halacha is that it's asur in this case, whose opinion does that follow? Ki Rabbi Meir. It must be Rabbi Meir's opinion. It must be the problem here is that even with one-on-one with the Nachri, there's a problem. And that's why in this case where you have the inner area, you have one Nachri and one Jew, it's problematic, is because they are subscribing to the position of Rabbi Meir. Karkish Rabba Reshe. Rabba shook his head up and down, basically saying, yes, that must be it. So Rabba is agreeing to what Rav Sheshet said. I'm Rabbi Yosef. Trey Gravre Ravravek Rabbonon. Two great Rabbanon like Rav Sheshet and Rabba, Litu B'hai Milta, are making a mistake like this? How could they say this? Ik Rabbi Meir, Lama Li Yisrael B'chitzona. He says that the outer courtyard with the Jew in it is completely extraneous if that's the halacha. You could have just given the case, be one Jew, one Nachri, what's the din? Asur. Why are you passing like Rabbi Meir? What does the Jew in the outer courtyard have anything to do with this halachic question? That could be the answer. The answer is, this was the situation. It was halacha that was brought before them. This is the situation. What's the din? He says that's not the case, because by me name Mirav, Pnimi bimkomo mahu. The Pnimi in his location, what's his din? Varmalan mutar. He says it's mutar. So that can't be the situation, and that can't be the answer. Because if you're talking about the Jew himself in the inner courtyard with regards to the Nachri, he is mutar in that case, because that's one-on-one. So first of all, it shows you that the halacha is not like Rabbi Meir, because he's saying one-on-one is fine. Number two, it shows you that what made it asur here was the Jew on the outer courtyard. Because without the Jew in the outer courtyard, they're willing to be matir. So that's clearly the tipping point here, is the Jew in the outer courtyard in the chatzer. So then, Elamai, who is this like? To Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. This must be like Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov says, until you have two Yisraelim and an Achri, then it's not asur. Va'amar adyu shnei Yisraelim usrim ze al ze. Didn't we say before it has to be two Yisraelim causing each other to be asur? Over here, they're in separate courtyards. They're not being usar each other. In each courtyard, there's only one Jew, and the other Jew does not affect the Jew in his courtyard. He doesn't need an Eruv with the other Jew. He keeps his own private courtyard. He can carry his own private courtyard without any problem. Ela ki Rabbi Akiva. It must be like Rabbi Akiva. The answer is, Mara says, okay, if it's Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, then he needs three Yisraelim, Osrim Zel Zeh. Where is the Osrim Zel Zeh here? Ela ki Rabbi Akiva. That's a Machlok Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbonon that we saw earlier. What happens if Regel Bim Komo? Regel Bim Komo means that in your location, what's your status? And then how do you affect something else? So over here, in the inner courtyard, the Jew, one-on-one with the Nachri, is totally mutar to carry in his chatzer. He has no problem. Anything you want, you can do there. Now, he has rights to walk through the outer courtyard, because that's how he exits from his courtyard. It's a captive courtyard. The way that he gets out is that he passes through the outer courtyard. So in passing through the outer courtyard, what is his impact on the outer courtyard? That we saw earlier is a machloket, Rabbi Akiva, and the Chachamim, and the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan say, regala mutar bim komo. If you're mutar in your place, then when you traverse the outer courtyard, you don't have any impact on it. Rabbi Akiva says, regular mutar bimkomo, oser shalo bimkomo. That a regular in its own place causes a problem when it's out of place. And that's what's causing the osrim zelzeh here. That's what the Gemara says. Elok Rabbi Akiva. Teramah, regular mutar bimkomo, oser shalo bimkomo. The regular in its place, that means the inner courtyard, where it's one-on-one Jew and the Nachri, where the Jew is permitted to use the courtyard without any problems. Then, when he walks, and he has rights to walk through the outer courtyard, oseret shelo bimkoma. He's oser that courtyard. So Gemara says, then lamali nochri. Why does the non-Jew have any impact over here? You could have set this case up with a Jew in the inner courtyard and a Jew in the outer courtyard, and you have the exact same situation, which is regular muteret mukoma. The Jew is mutar in the inner courtyard. It's his courtyard. When he walks through the outer courtyard, then he ruins it for the person in the outer courtyard. Not when he does it, but the fact that he has a right to do it ruins it for the outer courtyard. Afil Yisrael Nami. So Amar Rav Huna Brei Rabbi Shua, the Olam Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Uka Rabbi Akiva. The case here is Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Akiva put together. So what's the case here? Kagon she'irvu. So here comes Tzvi to answer your question. Now they made an eruv between them. So this is the case. The case is where the inner courtyard, the outer courtyard made a roof. Now they have an eruv between them. They should be mutarim. V'taima d'ika nachri d'asur. Avaleka nachri lo asur. Certainly, if there was no nachri there, then making an eruv between them would have been totally fine. They've now shared their courtyard. They become a single entity. They, of course, can walk out of here. The nachri now makes the problem. The nachri is no longer are you one-on-one anymore with the inner area. Now we become two-on-one. Because the joining of us through the eruv makes us two-on-one, not one-on-one. And we don't say that just because we made an eruv, we now become one person. You're not going to say that the making of the eruv into one person now makes us one-on-one and everything should be mutar. That's not the case. When you make the eruv, you're still two people, but that eruv allows us to utilize the chaserot as if we are one person. Eruv says that we are two people, but now we shared ownership over the courtyard, which is into like a quasi-singular ownership, and therefore we can carry between them. But once we do that, we involve the nachri in the problem. And if we involve the nachri in the problem, now we have something that creates an Easter. We have Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov that comes in here. Because even though it's a regular mutar bim komo, technically the Jew himself in that location was totally fine. The fact that he has a right to walk in the outer courtyard now makes you two. And now you have two on one. Two on one is a problem with the nachri. That's why you need both Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Akiva here to make the situation asur. And that's why Rav said the halacha is, with regards to the inner chatzer, mutar, you can carry there. Because there's only one Jew with the nachri. And that's the din of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. As far as the outer courtyard is concerned, we have Rabbi Akiva's din. Rabbi Akiva's din says that the Jew in the inner courtyard has a sheikhut, has impact on the outer courtyard. And that's why they had to make an eruv. According to the Chachamim, they wouldn't even need an eruv. The Jew in the inner courtyard can carry. He's mutar bim gomo. The outer courtyard, it's a regular shemutar bim gomo, does not affect the outer courtyard. The outer courtyard is also fine because it's one Jew. But according to Rabbi Akiva, where there is a problem, when the person in the inner courtyard is mutar in his place, he affects the outer courtyard. Now you need an eruv between them. The eruv between them would have made it totally mutar without the nachri, because now they have an eruv. But now with the entrance of the nachri into the picture, and the connection between the inner courtyard and the outer courtyard, according to Rabbi Akiva, now you have a problem. You have two Jews in the outer courtyard connected to the nachri, and that's Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov who says there's a problem there, two Jews and a nachri. And that's why we need the combination of both Rabbi Akiva's din and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's din subscribing to their positions in order to understand the halacha here. Alright, next case. By Minei Rabbi Elazar Meirav, or Rabbi Elazar Meirav, they asked the question of Rabbi Yisrael v'Nachri b'chitzonav, Yisrael b'pnimit. They reversed the case. The Yisrael and the Nachri on the outer courtyard, Yisrael b'pnimit, and then you have Yisrael on the inner courtyard, Ma'u, what's the din? So basically the question is this din parallel to the same din we just had before? And the din that we had before where it's the Jew and the non-Jew in the inner courtyard, and a Jew in the outer courtyard, if you reverse it, does it have the exact same din? Now, technically, it should have the same din. There's no difference. If they make an error between them, you basically created the same situation, which is, now they both, okay, I'm carrying the chatzerot, had it not been for the nachri. But the fact that the Jew in the inner case is mutar, that he can walk now into the outer courtyard causes a problem because him joined together with the other Jew in the outer courtyard together with the nachri caused a problem. So the din, if you had looked at this without having the Gemara here, you would have said that this is identical to the other case. But the Gemara now poses a question, which is, maybe not, because hatam taima mishum d'shchiach d'dayer. People will live in that other situation. The situation where the inner courtyard involves a Jew and a non-Jew, and the outer courtyard involves a Jew, people will live there. Demirta nachri. The nachri is afraid to do anything. He's afraid to kill the Jew in the inner courtyard because he has a watch guard in the outer courtyard. The outer courtyard Jew says to him, what happened to the Jew in the inner courtyard? So what's his answer going to be? He left. He went away for the day. The guy in the outer courtyard says, that's not true. I live in the outer courtyard. I know he never left here. He never went through here. So he has an easy way of checking up on what the Nachri did. And if he kills the Jew, he's going to be found out very quickly because the Jew in the outer courtyard is going to know that the inner Jew is no longer passing through. So therefore, he says, Savar hashta at Yisrael b'amarli. This Jew in the outer courtyard is going to come and say to me, Yisrael dava gabeich, heicha, where is the Jew that lives with you? In that situation, he is afraid to do anything to the Jew because the Jew in the outer courtyard is going to be aware of it. So that's why people will live in that situation, because they have a built-in protection. In our case where it's reversed, the Jew and the non-Jew live in the outer courtyard, and the Jew lives in the inner courtyard. So the Jew in the inner courtyard passes out, and he says to the non-Jew, hey, what happened to the Jew that was here? So what is the non-Jew going to say? He went. He left. He went on a trip. The Jew in the inner courtyard has no way of verifying that information. He doesn't have to pass the inner courtyard in order to leave, and therefore there's not an automatic check that he can't lie about this, because he could lie and now get away with it. So since that's the case, people will not live in that situation. The whole fear here is that they don't live with the Nachri because of the possible outcomes of living with the Nachri. So if you have two there, then there's protection. Then when you have two separate courtyards, that protection is only afforded when you have the Jew in the outer courtyard and the non-Jew and the Jew in the inner courtyard. But if it's reversed, you don't have that protection, because the inner courtyard is not automatically a guard or a way to see what's going on in the outer courtyard. So because of that, maybe there's no fear here for the non-Jew. If that's the case, this is not shchiach. Not shchiach, there's no gzeirat chachamim. We said before, and it only goes there in cases where it's shchiach, where people normally live. Over here, people don't normally live this way, so there would be no gzeirah. Odilma, maybe say, achanami mirtat. He says, fear, msavar hashta at Yisrael b'chazili. The fear comes from not the ability to check on him and say the Jew never passed by, but the Jews interact with each other. And so therefore, the person in the inner courtyard is going to come out, and he's going to see what the non-Jew's doing. He's going to catch him in the act. The idea of nichnas v'yotze. This is the concept in kashrut of a nichnas v'yotze. Somebody, you don't know when they're going to come, you don't know when they're going to appear, then you're always afraid to do something because they can always catch you. So over here, he's afraid to act because the person coming out would catch you. And that'd be a problem. Amalei, ten l'chacham v'yichlamot. Give to the wise person and they'll be even wiser. As Rashi explains, that means just like there it's asur, so too here it's asur. So both of these cases are considered to be shriach and it is asur. Rish Lakish v'tamidei d'Rabbi Chanina. Rish Lakish and the students of Rabbi Chanina igloo d'ha'u pundak. They went to this motel, this bed and breakfast. So Rashi describes the pundak here in two ways. One is a pundak. He describes more like everybody had their own cabin and they were in a single courtyard. Then he describes it more like a motel where everybody was in a single building but everybody had their own room. But either way, as Tosafot points out, it's on the next on Samach Vav, Tosafot says, brings Rashi's interpretation and says they're both true. In both these cases, you have a problem. Because everybody that's there now shares ownership of the common area. So since they share ownership of the common area, whoever is renting there, whoever is there for the night, also shares in the common area. So whether it's in a single house and the hallways or the areas around, or whether it's in a courtyard, everybody shares the common area when they rent out. That's what you're granted. You're granted the right to the room plus the common area. So in this hotel along with them was a non-Jew. So now the non-Jew causes a problem for them on Shabbat. The owner, the landlord here, is a non-Jew. The landlord rented out to another non-Jew. So you have a problem because the renter is a non-Jew, and he's going to cause a problem in terms of his ownership here in the joint area. The problem is, lo hava socher, the renter was not there, v'hava maskir, but the landlord was there. Amru, ma'u l'megir mine, can we rent from the landlord and not from the socher? The socher technically owns the rights to this now. He rented it from the landlord, and you're trying to get rights to his property. He's not around, and nobody from his family is around, because if his wife or his kids were there, you could do it from them. Because we said before, skirov l'kito, anybody who's involved with him, you can rent from. But they're not there. So now you need to rent from the landlord. But does the landlord really have rights to this property anymore? He gave up his rights already. So everybody agrees that if the landlord cannot remove him from the property, he does not have a right to remove the socher from the property, whether it means change his room, or it means that he can throw him out at any time, then it's clear that you can't rent from the landlord because the landlord has no control. If he can throw you out of the room, or if he can change your location, he can stop the rental at any time, does he have enough power to rent from him? And that rental will be sufficient. So Kevin the Matzi Misalik Agrino, since he can throw him out, you can rent from him. Or maybe, since he hasn't moved him now, and he's letting the socher stay with there, then you can't rent from him because he doesn't really have rights. He hasn't thrown him out yet. Is the right to throw him out enough? Or does he have to actually have thrown him out? Let us rent it. When we reach the rabbis in the south, the Shalahan, we'll ask the halacha. Atu, Shalah, the Rabbi Ephes, the Han, and ask Rabbi Ephes, Amalahan, he answered them, Yafe Asitem. What you did was righteous, Sechartem, that you rented it out, because that type of schira is sufficient. This has major, major nafkamino to halacha. That is number one. That's how the Eruvs work. We discussed this before. In towns and in areas, it's a schirut ru'ua. We said before, you don't need a full-fledged schirut. You just need a symbolic type of schirut. And the schirut can be from any authority has the right to throw you out of your house. That's why the exercise of eminent domain is how we rent from the civil authorities. When we rent from the civil authorities, since they can throw you out of your house through eminent domain, that's enough power, that's enough ownership to allow you to rent from the authorities to give you the rights to the chatzerot or to the areas in the town. So that's number one. Number two case is what might be the difference between a hotel and a hospital. In a hospital, you have the same problem. Everybody's in their own hospital room. And then you have the joint areas, which are the hallways. So on Shabbat, can you carry through the hospital? The question here is, how is the ownership exercise? When you're in the hospital, does the hospital have a right to move you from any room? They could throw you out of your room at any time and move you to another room. Or when you're put into a room, you have a right to that room, and therefore they can't move you anymore. Most hospitals, they can do whatever they want, and they can move you from your room, they can do whatever they want with you. Therefore, if the hospital has singular ownership, you may not need an Eruv within the hospital, because they have the right to exercise over any participant or anybody's in the hospital. They have the right to move them. Since they can move them at any time and whenever they want, therefore, you don't need an Eruv there. In a hotel, that's the question. Is the same true in the hotel? In a hotel, once they've rented you the room for the night, can they really throw you out of that room and move you? It's not so clear that they can throw you out of the room at that point. Once they've rented you a room, in the morning, they can ask you to move to another room. But that night, they may not. They can ask you. I don't know if they can force you. In other places, they might be able to force you. And the rules might be that they can throw you out and move you to another room whenever they want. That will make a difference as to whether you need an Eruv in the hotel. When you're in a hotel and you have the joint spaces in the hallways in the hotel, do you need an Eruv for that? In an apartment building, it's pretty clear that the landlord can't throw you out anytime he wishes or anytime he pleases. Because of that, you wouldn't need an Eruv in the apartment building, except in a case where you're the only Jew in the apartment building, maybe not. We discussed that before. But apartment building seems pretty clear you will need an Eruv. Hospital seems pretty clear you don't need it. Question is, in these hotels, motels, they seem to sit in between, and it's not clear there. Most people say you do need an Eruv in those cases, but it has to do with how close is it to being a hospital versus how close is it to being an apartment building in those cases. The other thing to note here is Reish Lakish. It's very interesting. Reish Lakish here is speaking to Rabbi Ephes. Rabbi Ephes is someone who is a peer of Rabbi, and the Gemara says that he died 2 years after Rabbi passed away. That means that Reish Lakish already, at this point in time, is already learning Torah. That's very early on in his life. Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are significantly younger than Rav and Shmuel. And Rav, we know, is one of the Talmidim of Rabbi. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish to have a discussion at one point. Don't you remember Rav back in the old good old days in Eretz Yisrael? And they go, yeah. He was the guy who sat in the front of the shir. They were always in the back of the shir because they were much younger. Rav was a Talmid of Rabbi. They were like young whippersnappers in the way back of the shir. And so Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have less memory of Rav. Rav already leaves the Bavel. By the time that they get older, they come into their position. From this, the Rabbeinu Tam proves that Reish Lakish was not a robber his whole life. He wasn't a robber that Rabbi Yochanan brought back with tshuva, but he actually was a robber, one of the Rabbanon. He left the Derech, became a robber, and then came back. Rabbi Yochanan convinced him to come back, not to start learning Torah at that point. Yes, this would be very young because it's Rabbi Ephes. Rabbi Ephes, who's a peer of Rabbi, who had been Reish Lakish's younger years. And from this, Rabbeinu Tam, Tosafot says explicitly again in Baba Metziah, because over there they give the term to Reish Lakish of Rabbi. The Reish Lakish says, why did it help me come back to be a Talmid Chacham? They call me Rabbi before, they call me Rabbi now. Question is, what do they call him Rabbi for? Rashi over there says they call him Rabbi, he was the Rosh Ganavim. He was the head of the Ganavim. There, Tosafot disagrees and says Rabbi comes from his original status. He originally was a Rebbe. He originally had the status of title of a Rav. He went off the Derech and then came back, and that's what he's referring to. And Tosafot proves it from here, this case here by Reish Lakish, where he's interacting with Rabbi Ephes, which would seem that Reish Lakish, when he was very young, already was learning Torah. Next case here is Rabbi Chanina bar Yosef, Rabbi Chia bar Ava, Rabbi Asi, Iklu l'hav pundak. Same story, they end up in this motel, or they end up in this joint area where they're renting. Da'ata Nachri married the pundak b'shabto. Originally, the owner was not there. Middle of Shabbos, the Nachri shows up, and now they're in trouble, because the Nachri shows up, it ruins it for them. Multiple Israelim, Nachri, now you have a problem, the Eruv falls apart. Amru ma'ul megar minei. Can you rent from him on Shabbat itself? Socher kim me'arev dami. Is socher the equivalent of putting out an Eruv? Ma me'arev min bojom, af socher mi bojom. Just like you have to do the Eruv before the onset of Shabbat, so too you have to rent from the Nachri before the onset of Shabbat. Odilma. Socher kim me'vatel reshut dami. Is renting from the Nachri the equivalent of giving up one's ownership, disengaging from their property on Shabbat, a person who relinquishes his control over his property and allows the Eruv to go through? Ma me'vatel reshut afilu b'Shabbat. Then you can accomplish even on Shabbat, because we've seen before, that's the way they get around the problem. If you didn't make an Eruv and they need to carry on Shabbat, you do Bittul Rishut. Av socher, vafilu b'Shabbat. so too a zocher even on Shabbat. Rabbi Chanina bar Yosef Amar Niskor. Chanina bar Yosef says, let us rent it. Rabbi Asi Amar Lo Niskor. Asi says, let's not rent it. Amar Lo Rabbi Chir Ba'ava Nismach Al Divrei Zaken. Let us follow the elder here, the elder being Rabbi Chanina bar Yosef, whether he was just the oldest amongst them or he really was older, significantly older than them. Viniskor, and let us rent it out. Atu Shaila de Rabbi Yochanan. They afterwards went to Rabbi Yochanan to ask the Shaila to see if they acted appropriately. And Yafeh Asitem Shesachartem. Did the right thing by renting it out. So over here you have a decision being made, and then they verify their decision afterwards. Now the interesting thing here is, didn't we have this case before? We had this case before where they had a Nachri in their neighborhood, and the Nachri refused to rent to them. So Abai suggested to them, what should they do? They should all be Mevatel Rishut. They should all join together and be Mevatel Rishut into a single entity. Then it'll be one-on-one with Nachri, and it'll be Mutar. And it'll be totally fine. So again, over here, why don't they do the same thing? Why are they being socher from the Nachri over here? They could have done the exact same thing. They could have all been Mevatel Rishut to a single individual. And now it'll just be one-on-one with the Nachri again, and they wouldn't need to do any Skirut. Number two is, they made an Eruv before Shabbat. They made an Eruv before Shabbat came in, and now they're all in joint ownership. The fact that you have an Eruv also does not help you to get rid of this problem. It's because they're joint ownership to the Eruv. It doesn't say you're one-on-one with the Nachri. You need two things. You need either Eruv and Schirut, or you need Bitul Rishut and Schirut. Tosafot asks about that case before. How come over there they just needed Bitul Rishut, they did not need Schirut? That is because the difference in the cases, Tosafot points out in that case, the Nachri refused to rent to them. And he never was going to rent to them. There was never a possibility of ever renting from this Nachri. So in that case, the only solution is to be Mevatel Rishut and never be Socher because they can't be Socher from him. Rova says to Abaye, Bidaltum Torit Eruv. You ruined the Eruv here. But why did you ruin the Eruv over here? Because these people can never make an Eruv. Because the Nachri is never going to agree to come into the party. So therefore, what are they always going to do? Bitul Rishut. And if they always do Bitul Rishut, that allows them to carry, even though it's not the best way to do it, because not everybody, according to Tosafot's conclusion, can carry there. Only the person who got the Bitul Rishut can carry there. And if you did an Eruv, you'd be in a much better situation. Everybody carry. You are Bidaltum Toret Eruv, because over there, you can never make an Eruv. The guy's never going to rent it. So it'll never work. So that's why you're always doing Bitul, and there, if that's your only methodology, nobody's going to remember anything about Eruv. They're going to think Bitul Rishut is the only way to go. But because of that, that's different in this case. In this case, the Nachri shows up on Shabbat. Had he been there before Shabbat, he would have rented it to you. So you did have the ability to rent it from him before Shabbat. So over here, it's a different situation. You don't have Rova's criticism of Abaye that bitaltem Torat Eruv, because here in the subsequent week, this Nachri would be willing to rent the property to you, and you could make an Eruv with Schirut. So therefore, Bitul Rishut should have worked over here without anything else. Why do you need anything more than Bitul Rishut? Why do you need Schirut at all? We could have just used Abaye's suggestion, Bitul Rishut, it becomes one-on-one with the Nachri, and you should have been totally fine. So Tosafot gives two answers here. One possibility is that the Amoraim here are paskin like Rabbi Meir, where one-on-one is a problem, and therefore it's not a solution, because it's only a solution according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that if you're Mevatel Rishut, then you're one-on-one with the Nachri, but for Rabbi Meir it doesn't work. The other answer he gives is, we don't know if the Nachri is going to agree or acquiesce in the future to do this. And so, doing this Bitul Rishut like Abaye is not going to work necessarily, because the time we do the Bitul Rishut, we're not certain that the Nachri will rent to us in the future. If he won't rent to us in the future, then Rova's criticism is true, that you bitaltem Torah Teruv. On the other hand, if he is willing to rent to us in the future, then he hasn't been bitaltem Torah Teruv, because then we have the option for a roof, which is a much better option for everybody, because then everybody can carry, not just the one whose Rishut it was nitbatel to, and it wouldn't have been mitaltem Torah Teruv. But because of that, Safei, we say you can't do the Bitul Rishut, you need Schirut, and Bitul Rishut. And that's the conclusion of Tosafot, that this case requires both Schirut and Bitul Rishut to work in this situation. So you'd have to do Bitul Rishut plus Schirut. If you have an Eruv in place, that's not enough to get over the problem. You still need the Schirut to get over the problem. So because of that, Tosafot concludes that in all these cases, you need to do both. You can't just do Bitul Rishut. You have to do Bitul Rishut plus, you have to do Schirut, or you have to do Eruv plus Schirut in order to get over the problem. That case by Abaye and Rova is unique. And again, in this case, they had an Eruv in place beforehand, and the Eruv beforehand meant that they were able to carry, and then after the Nachri comes, he ruins the situation for them. Had they not been able to carry before the Nachri coming, they can't carry afterwards either. So it has to be an instance where there is an Eruv in place where they could have carried, and now the Nachri is ruining it for them.
And Tosafot says, despite the fact that the Eruv was in place beforehand, when the Nachri shows up and you rent it for him, it doesn't mean that the Eruv just automatically comes back into place. Even though we have situations like that that were described in the Gemara and Shabbat, That is not the case over here. Because there was a possibility that the Nachri would come on Shabbat and undermine the Eruv. When you put the Eruv in place, it's already a precarious Eruv. And when the Nachri comes, he ruins the Eruv, and you're starting from scratch. So now you would have to do Schirut plus Bitul Rishut in order to overcome the problem on Shabbat itself. It would not suffice to simply have Schirut and then rely on the original Eruv. Okay, we'll stop over here.